Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg, and I got James Kovacevic on the line. Hey, James.
Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Hey, pretty good. In a recent podcast, and you may have heard some of them by Kirk on the Speaking of Reliability show, where different parts of his house, his TV set, a fuse box, I think they had something else failed. Recently, I recorded one with Adam that had his boiler for his home heating system. They use a oil-based heating for hot water that circulated through the house to provide heat. Had eaten through the side of the chamber. And each of those recordings with Kirk and with Adam, they were typical reliability engineers. They were over the shoulder of the technician, and same as I am when I have something fail here, or my heater, central air, forced air heater system failed. And I'm right on the shoulder of that technician, and we're looking at circuit boards, we're looking at connectors, he's doing a bunch of experiments to figure out what the cause is. In all of those circumstances, the technicians usually look at us like, why are you so interested in this? I don't know, you're a reliability type guy. Do you when you have something fail at home, do you get pretty interested in it?
Typically, I try and figure it out myself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm successful, sometimes not. And earlier this year, when we started up the furnace for the first time this year, it would try to light, but it wouldn't stay lit. It would turn itself off, and then we get a flame fault error on the circuit board.
Right.
So after chasing it around for a couple hours, I decided, okay, just call the guy who works on this stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. He'll probably fix it in 2 seconds. So sure enough, he comes down, he opens it up, he checks two things. He pulls out these two tubes, looks inside, he goes, yep,
spiders.
Here's a spider. Spider in one of them.
Yeah, spiders.
And I'm like, so that's the root cause. He goes, yeah, I'm going to clean this out and it's going to start. It's going to run.
And it did.
You know? Oh yeah, absolutely. And it just floored me that it was that simple.
Well, there's nothing to say with a little experience. You kind of know where to look.
Exactly. But, kind of, you know, I want to know a root cause so I can prevent it from occurring again. I enjoy determining root causes, figuring out what the problems are, developing solutions for those, mm-hmm. and implementing those solutions.
Well, how are you going to keep spiders out of your heater over the summer?
I haven't figured that out yet. I thought maybe of a little screen, but he said sometimes that causes issues with airflow, so you'll get problems anyways. Mm-hmm. So instead of being a redesign, we're just going to do a little preventative maintenance. And before I start it up, I'm going to double check those tubes before I start it.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea.
So, but it all comes back to that root cause. If you understand what the root cause is, you can prevent this from reoccurring again. Nobody likes dealing with the same issues over and over and over.
No, nobody does. Unless you get paid a lot to go fix it.
That's your income.
But even then, it gets pretty boring.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's lots of challenges to root cause. Some of the things I see is there's a lot of pressure in a factory to get the line up and running. And so an operator or a technician will pull out a piece of equipment, put in a new motor, for example, and get the system up and running again real quick. And then the motor goes in the bag and most likely it doesn't get looked at again. It might, in some cases, if it has an interesting failure to it, might go on a trophy case as in somebody's office as a poster child for a type of failure they've seen. But getting to why that occurred, what was the stresses involved, what sequence of events caused that to occur, those things all too often just get overlooked. And there's pressure to get the line up again. There's your supervisor saying, hey, Bill, you're done yet. Get down to line 6. We got a fault there. There's plenty of work to do. But, and especially if you're a very reactionary process where you're just running from one failure to the next, you also look at that failure analysis part and go, yeah, I remember that from a class, but I don't have time. Yep. There's plenty of challenges.
Absolutely. You mentioned one of them right off the bat is something's broken. Mechanic rushes in there to fix that problem. They don't stop to collect the evidence of what occurred. Mm-hmm. Take some pictures. What was the how was the process operating? Do we have any abnormal readings? Do mm-hmm. we have any of that stuff? Collect that data up front. I wrote a blog post, I can't remember how long ago it was, probably 6 months ago now, about the crime scene. And how do you collect, what data should you collect before you run in there to rip up, to start repairing that machine?
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is like you mentioned, there's that intense pressure. They go and make the repair, and then they're forced to try and do some sort of root cause analysis methodology after the fact, but they don't have the data, nor can they ever get that data again because it's all been contaminated or destroyed.
All right. Or, you know, it's behind the cabinet where the lockouts are and the line's running. So I'm not going to open that, shut the line down to take some notes.
Exactly.
You know, kind of thing. Yeah, no, I remember that article. I'll have to link to it in the show notes. Take a picture or two and collect some of the basic information. And sometimes it's obvious. I've heard that over the radio a few times. It's, it looks like the installation was bad. And in this circumstance, we use this circuit and these wires are crossed, so it didn't start. So I reverse the wires. It's wired correctly now. It checks out it running. And sometimes it's that simple, but the root cause might be an installation instructions or a double check on did we get it wired right? How did they verify it was installed correctly? All of those elements might have been more deeply ingrained into what we can actually do about it.
Exactly. So even that simple example, you know, was the instructions wrong? Was the electrician that wired that aware, or were they just not paying attention and accidentally incorrectly wired it? There's a whole lot of things. Were they distracted from what was the reason, right?
Right.
So if we actually dive down and into those root causes, we may find our instructions are incorrect, or maybe the lighting in that area is so poor they can't see what they're doing. There's all kinds of things we can dive into to why that happened, right?
Right, right.
And I find that one of the reasons why root cause analysis isn't as effective in manufacturing plants, in my experience, is because of one, that pressure. And two, they don't go down to the right level of detail and put enough rigor behind those analysis. They'll do a simple 5Y for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not 5Ys is too much or too little, they go to that every single time. And when they hit 5, they're done.
And that's where the training has been reinforced. Do 5, you know, or the that's what's required or checked or whatever. Instead of the nature of what that process is about is to understand the physics or chemistry of what caused it to occur, or the process, the procedural piece that was an error that caused it to occur. Yeah, exactly. I've seen that too. Yeah, I've seen it much more often where it's just the symptom. Oh, it was a bad capacitor.
Yes.
Okay. Capacitors don't go bad by themselves very often. But in some cases, the technician doesn't have the equipment to do it. They take a motor out, for example, and looking at it visually, there's nothing wrong with it. There's no charring. There's no nothing. It's just, it's not getting the it's not running anymore. There might be a short internally or an open circuit. But short of tearing it apart, they won't know.
But that also goes to the culture of the site. Once again, we talk about culture all the time. But mm-hmm. to me, it's one of the foundations of any good program. If they truly want to understand what that root cause was because it caused significant amount of downtime and they can't do it on site, that's when you send it to the specialist. You send it to an independent failure analysis lab and mm-hmm. have them do some work on it so mm-hmm. we get the right information.
Right, right.
We can't solve all the problems at a plant level. As much as we like to think we can't for a variety of reasons. Time, resources, knowledge, capabilities, specialized engineering, whatever it is, we can't do them all. So understanding our limitations and leveraging experts when required can help us get to those root causes and eliminate those problems.
Mm-hmm. So some plants will take a component that fails, say a circuit board on a controlling circuit, and say, you know, this is the fourth one we've had to replace this month. I'm going to send this back to the vendor. What do you think of that approach? I'm saying, hey, it's not working. And they ship it off to the vendor.
I don't want any liability is what pops into my mind. So the vendor doesn't want that liability and acknowledgement that, hey, yeah, this was a manufacturing defect or whatever the case is. They don't want that.
Right.
So chances are you'll get a very generic report that's not very detailed.
They'll say, it failed.
Exactly. So you got to use that independent lab or have the specialist on site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it takes time and it takes energy and there's got to be a benefit for that. I think part of this, and we talked about it in a previous episode, is that cultural piece. I guess we do talk about it quite a bit, don't we? Is that if I'm going to invest in collecting the crime scene data, essentially, and then following up saying, well, here's the information. I've isolated it to, say, this circuit card. It's beyond my skill to do a chemical analysis of this corrosion that's on here to find out where that's coming from. That needs a chem lab. And so it's setting up some infrastructure to either have a good chemistry lab internally or have a lab set up. But again, if the technicians and the folks doing the first level repairs are seeing this stuff just go away and then nothing ever happens because of it, there's no feedback of what the root cause was or what we can do different, or any of the systemic changes to make improvements. If it just goes away and never gets acted on, I'm going to stop reporting it. It's not helpful.
Absolutely. And that goes back to implementing any critical process such as root cause analysis in any organization. If it's that important to an organization to eliminate defects and get to the root cause of issues, to eliminate them once and for all, there should be a couple of things in place. There should be a policy. And that policy indicates who is ultimately responsible for that. What triggers do we have? Whether it's a health and safety, environmental, or operational performance trigger that tells us we need to do an RC or a root cause analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have that, it should tell us if it's this, we can go to a simple approach where we can do a 5-Y across a couple different experts within the plant, and that's all we need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it causes this much downtime, we need to go to a fault tree analysis and really dig down and understand it much more detail. Mm-hmm. Or do we leverage outside services to help with that? The next piece is within that is having a follow-up process. Because I've seen some organizations where they do those first two things very well. They have defined triggers that initiates root cause analysis. Then they do those root cause analysis very well. But then they either get put in a book or filed in a folder on someone's computer, never to see the light of day again.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've seen in that, James, is where they get this great failure analysis, and then it's a design issue, right? And they're not in a position where they can redesign a circuit board or this piece of equipment or this process flow.
But that's a business decision, right? So if we understand that is the true root cause, and that's what we're gonna. By fixing that design, we can eliminate that root cause. We would get pricing on it and a business decision would be made. Does the cost outweigh the benefits or vice versa? How often do we experience this? So on and so forth. Mm-hmm, so even if we make a business decision not to do that, that's fine. We document it. We communicate to everyone. This is what we found. Here's what the recommendations are.
Right.
From a business standpoint or justification, it doesn't make sense. But we communicate that back.
Well, right? the barrier I saw was that the design team, the folks that were designing the lines and working with vendors to bring in this equipment, they were on a different floor. They were essentially in a different building. For all intent and purposes, they were in a different planet from the folks on the floor. And part of the culture was that the folks designing the line very rarely took a guided tour even of the plant, much less ever showed up to ask questions and see what was going on. So I think there was a more systemic problem there with their design team.
But absolutely.
The maintenance guys, you know, they need to be integral with the design process, in my opinion, but it's a two-way street. It also means, well, here's where the opportunities are to make improvements and making that business case that this is where where we can make significant improvements.
Yep. And that's where the asset management model comes into effect. And that's where it starts to really generate the benefits, is we have that cross-functional approach. We're not looking just at price, but overall cost, mm-hmm. life cycle costing on different options, all those things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But at least, you know, in that example where we made the justification not to do the work, that should be linked to the equipment, filed, stored. So that way, when we go to buy a new one,
that's right,
we look at that history and said, okay, we've had these issues. This reoccurred 2-3 times. It didn't make sense to retrofit, but we can incorporate those learnings into the new design.
That's right. Or if nothing else, you buy more spares.
Something.
Yeah.
Right? You do something.
That's right. You alleviate that issue or make it detectable so you don't take downtime unnecessarily. Something. I agree.
And then one of the other ways, I just want to mention this, that I've seen root cause analysis fail in organizations is they've got that report and they're all the recommendations they can implement. Mm-hmm. So they start, they implement this top 2 or 3, and then they forget about the rest until that occurs again. Then they go back, look at the report and be like, oh, we did the top 3. We didn't do these bottom ones. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some sort of tracking and feedback mechanism to make sure that once we decide we're going to implement those corrective actions or preventative actions, that they're actually followed through on.
Well, I know in some organizations, they have a team that's doing upgrades or installing new lines and bringing new equipment up to speed or bringing new lines on or new equipment online, those kinds of teams. I've not seen teams that go back and do existing equipment updates and upgrades. And there may be some programs and some organizations that do that, but I've not seen a good tracking system for that within plants. In product development, we call that FRACAS, a failure reporting and corrective action system, which is an essential tracking system with a weekly check-in to say what's the progress on all these different things. What I'm thinking of is in some plants I've seen it where it's a program, we're going to upgrade all of our PLCs to different firmwares. We had to go make sure that's all done correctly. And that is just basically accountability that upgrade is implemented throughout. But it's pretty simple compared to having 20 or 30 action items across a number of different failure analysis reports that all have different timelines. It becomes a much more constantly updated, constantly changing project.
It doesn't all have to fall to the reliability engineers on site. Some of those actions might be simple enough to, such as review the procedure and make sure the procedure is correct. And you assign that to a maintenance supervisor to walk through with one of the mechanics mm-hmm, or electricians. Mm-hmm. Right? It might be to update, make sure we're inspecting this in the PM and it's called out correctly. So that goes to the maintenance planner. So we can share the love, if you will, across the whole team. So we're not overwhelming certain individuals, but there needs to be that mechanism. So the FRAC is in place to do that.
Well, how about implementing on the, we've talked about collecting failure data. And as repairs get done, is there a review board or a review process for the quality or the action items that are coming out of root cause analysis reports?
So there should be. So, you know, there should be a meeting every 2 weeks, once a month, depending on how many root cause analysis you're doing and how many actions you're generating. Mm-hmm. That looks at how many analysis did we do? How many actions did each one of those have? And did we close out all actions for each one? So mm-hmm, essentially mm-hmm. you can't close out the analysis until you complete all actions. And there should be that review process to hold people accountable to make sure we're closing out what we need to. It could be as simple as a spreadsheet that has the action, the due date, and the owner. And that's what we use to manage it. We just need something to do it.
I've seen quality teams often take on that role. And in a plant, there might be a process quality team that's taking care of metrology and a variety of other items. But I don't know. If it's one of those things as a reliability engineer, I like going out and breaking things and fixing stuff and doing data analysis, all that good stuff. That tracking of action items, I need a manager. quality guys seem to like doing that stuff, so I usually recruit one of them.
And that's fine. We just need to make sure we have that mechanism, right?
Right.
Making sure we actually close out what we say we're going to do to prevent it from reoccurring.
Yeah, it's a slippery,
easier said than done.
Yeah, I was just going to say and it's got to be, I mean, it's easy to, I think, to get the initial traction on it. You got like five or six root causes and you do the detailed work and you implement some changes. And for the next 3-4 months, you're not being plagued by those problems. And that's great. And it's a diminishing return, though. The more we fix, the fewer systemic or major issue problems we have, the issues start becoming harder and harder. They're more intractable, or they're intermittent type problems, or they're relatively infrequent. So it's harder and harder to make that business case. Equipment wears, though. So I think there's a fresh supply of new problems on a regular basis, but a well-running plant then has to moderate. Well, we don't do a detailed root cause analysis on every issue we get. We're only getting one major issue a week. Is it worth the effort and time to do that? And I think there's a gray line there. But if you get into that situation, you probably know that your data collection and root cause analysis programs are working pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also where that policy comes into play. When are we actually going to invest the time, and to what level are we going to invest our people and resources into these different failures based mm-hmm. on frequency, amount of, or not only frequency, but duration and all those other factors that come into play?
Well, James, I just thought of another episode, another whole string of questions that I want to talk to you about is the benefits of doing this root cause analysis. I mean, we alluded to it a few times, but what is it we need to be looking for? So I'm going to leave that out there as a tentative topic for a future episode, and we'll come back to that a little bit later.
Excellent.
All right. So I'm going to hand off to talk to the listeners directly here for a second and ask, you know, if you've got a topic that you'd like James and I to chat about, or if there's a particular question or challenge you're facing, let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. There's contact forms and places to leave comments on the different episodes, and we'd love to hear from you. A big part of the show is having the chance to add your voice to the show and asking questions is a great way to do that. And so we'd love to hear from you. So with that, James, I should ask, I know that you've got your podcasts going. I'm trying to think, this show will come out, I believe, in April. And I think you're going to be at your 50th episode by then, I believe.
I'll be getting very close at that point. I think number 40 comes out next week. So yeah, if it's April, it'll be close to 50.
It'll be pretty close. You're going to do anything special for the milestone shows?
I'm not sure yet. I'm actually writing the 100th blog post this week.
Cool.
So I'm doing that. And for the 50th, I don't know. I toyed around with the idea of bringing on my daughters to talk for a couple of minutes because, you know, they give me some time to do this. I'm sure they'd enjoy it. So,
oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure your fans out there would love to hear a little bit more of what's happening around the house and around the studio there. But
if you ask my daughter what I do, she says she fixes things he fixes things and he fixes people. That's what she tells people. So be interested to have her on for a couple minutes and ask her some questions about that.
That's right. Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. And I probably should do the same with my mother. She still thinks I drive trains. She had never got past that. And I say, no, Mom, I do the same thing when I was 7 when I took apart the toaster. I break things. But all right. Well, cool, James. Have a nice, stay warm up there. And I understand when we're recording this, it's actually pretty chilly up there. I think we're in for a bunch of rain and nice 60, 70 degree weather. So shouldn't be too bad here in beautiful California. But I'll try not to rub it in too much.
Yeah, I try not to. I'll have to come down there and visit for a couple of weeks to get away from the cold.
Yeah, yeah. If, you know, the next client that takes you up into the Great White North, you know, tell them you got an appointment down here. We'll put you up. No worries. That'd be cool. All right. Well, thanks much, James. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic, that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.